From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the very first day of August 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Just a bit later in the program, the folks at the Andersons will join us from right here in Champaign County to take up the situation on the ground in their area, basis levels, and what cash grain movement is like as we head deeper into the summer and how good the crop really might be. And then as we close out our time together, we'll talk with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois, about the agricultural weather forecast in the Midwest and across the rest of the growing regions around the planet, right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago on this Monday afternoon. September corn at $3.25¾, 8¾ lower. December down 8½ at $3.34¼. The March at $3.43¼, 8¼ lower. And the May corn down 8¼ at $3.49. July $3.54¾, down 8 cents. A soy complex. August beans down 36½. Biggest losses coming in the bean pit today. $9.96 a settlement price for the August. September at $9.81¼, down 38¾. November 41½ cents lower at $9.61½. January down 41 at $9.62. And the March soybeans at $9.53½, 38½ cents lower. May down 35¾ at $9.50½. Bean oil 60 cents lower at $29.75. The bean meal at $3.34, down $16 even. September wheat futures soft red down 1¾ at $4.06. December at $4.33, down 2¾. July of next year 3/4 lower at $4.79¾. The hard red July for next year at $4.72¼, down a half cent. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the August up $2.85 at $115.92½. The October at $114.07½, $2.35 higher. Feeder cattle up $4.50 at $144.55. And the September's there at $143.75, up the $4.50 expanded limit as well. August lean hogs down 32½ cents at $68.65. October at $60.60, $1.55 higher for the afternoon. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Check us out online. Most of our agricultural programming is posted there not long after it airs on our radio station, in case of Commodity Week, before it ever airs on any of our stations. You can find it online at WILLAG.org. That's Will Ag. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel on this Monday afternoon. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
There was a pretty good-sized drop in the marketplace today, especially in the soybeans. What happened?
Well, we need to change my day around these Mondays. They're getting kind of brutal for some reason. I'm sure hopefully Wayne will have a better day than today.
Yeah.
thought we'd hold in there a little bit better. We did see a early morning announcement of 391,000 tons of beans sold dead known, but you know, that's supposedly to be China. That kind of expected though, because this is the time of year they're wanting to get some beans bought, and they want to get them bought, get them shipped here, so they can turn the boats back to the southern hemisphere later on this winter. Then we did see some talk that China returning or not wanting to take two cargoes of Brazilian beans due to red dioxin in some of the beans. We'll see if there's more news on that or not. But the exporters, you know, could possibly switch some of those to the U.S., but they're just talking just two cargoes. Well, that might be a developing story as we move down the road. But then, too, also midday here, Ag Rural out of Brazil was looking at the 16-17 bean crop, over 100 million metric tons. That's about where we were a year ago, you know, on projection. So with the favorable weather and no real bullish news in through here, we're seeing some selling come in. Friday's up was, kind of a light volume. It was last day of the month. Now to believe maybe funds were kind of protecting their position for month end. But we're down here where we need to draw a line in the sand on these beans at this 960 area. failure to hold here suggests, we continue to drift lower as we move forward. The thing is this afternoon's crop condition report expected to show unchanged, maybe slightly lower. As visual observations continue, crop looks fairly good. Producers, moving some old crop, making room for new crop as we rapidly, see the calendar slip by. So just overall negative tone in through here. Kind of feel May market's just a little too bearish here for a moment. May have a little recovery here as we go into midweek, but not enough as we want to get to, make additional sales.
USDA is, at this point, trying to figure out what's the size of the crop. There will be some objective, but mostly subjective measures of the size of the soybean and corn crop across the United States. So much of that will come from surveys that farmers need to fill out. What do you think it will show? And did you make note, and you may not have yet, that Daryl Good posted to the Farm Doc Daily website that on corn, the trade tends to be off by about 250 million bushels some of the time in this August number. And I suspect maybe it will be 250 too big this time around. But what are your thoughts about that crop production report as we head towards it on the 12th day of the month?
Well, I would think that we'd see a larger number. I think the trades on corn is probably closer to 172 bushels the acre, beans maybe around 48. If you're judging the crop by the good to excellent category, it's strong, suggesting, the plant development's there. When you look at some of these guys coming in and, pulling back shucks in some areas, there's some tip back, whether that's enough to, shave some bushels off or not, we'll have to see, because some of those ears are fairly big. And we'll have to see if that's widespread or not. But as you mentioned, it is an actual physical survey. A lot of it's more of a population count, more of an ear count. So I would expect, the crop is going to be larger. How much larger we're going to see, but that might be the largest number we see here as we move through the next few reports after this one, Todd.
Anything to add on the livestock side for the afternoon?
Well, feeders finally caught fire here, lower corn values, a little bit more concern or demand for feeders, technical buying in the cattle. They came in and bought cattle and sold hogs on the spread there. These fats, August fats are 115. We'll see those come into delivery here next week, but cash is expected to firm. Wouldn't be surprised to see these August fats kind of migrate back towards this 118, 119 level, Todd.
Hey, Kurt, thanks so much.
Very good. Take care.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities. He joins us on this Monday afternoon. In today's agricultural news, in case you missed it, President Barack Obama late Friday signed the GMO labeling bill into law, nullifying Vermont's measure. The president's signature ended a years-long campaign by the food and agriculture industries to get the federal government to preempt state labeling efforts, and it kicked off the next phase in the GMO labeling fight, which will take place in the private sector and through USDA rulemaking. The agency now has 2 years to craft rules to implement the statute, which requires product disclosures be made through one of three options: on-package language, a USDA-designed symbol, or through a QR code. We'll stay in Washington, D.C., but address now legislation that has yet to move. When Congress returns to Washington, it will have over 100 appropriations bills to work through, including the Ag Appropriations Bill. That could face some stiff challenges. Both the House and Senate versions of Ag Appropriations would cut current spending levels by 2%. The toughest policy fights in the bill include e-cigarettes, poultry, and food stamps. The House bill was amended to exempt e-cigarettes and premium cigars from FDA regulation, which Appropriations Committee Democrats oppose. The Senate bill does not contain that same amendment. A provision in both bills would block a USDA rule requiring stores that accept food stamps to put healthier choices on their shelves, too. Opponents of that rule say it's too burdensome for businesses. The House bill would block the Grain Inspection Packers and Stockyards Administration, or GIPSA, from giving contract protections to poultry growers while they negotiate with processors. That language is not included in the Senate version of the bill. Let's move now from appropriations to transportation. American agriculture uses freight train cars on the nation's railroads to ship countless numbers of commodities to ports for overseas shipping. The Washington Post says freight railroads lost out to Amtrak in a recent dispute that went before the Surface Transportation Board this week. The dispute was over whether or not Amtrak's passenger trains have an absolute right of way over cargo trains. The Transportation Board withdrew a proposal supported by the freight industry that would have altered the law giving passenger trains preferences over cargo carriers. We'll move even a little closer to home now, where a recent survey of about 2,000 farmers showed increasing support for cover crops and found higher yields for the fourth year in a row for corn and soybean fields after using cover crops. The American Seed Trade Association says multi-year data shows increasing yields as cover crops are planted year after year. Farmers surveyed said their use of cover crops has grown steadily, averaging just about 300 acres per farm in 2015, projected to grow to 339 this year. Corn yields rose 3.4 bushels to the acre after using cover crops, and soybean yields up 1.5 bushels to the acre. Data show the corn yields jumped 8.3 bushels per acre after cover crops were used four consecutive seasons, and soybean yields pushed up 2.4 bushels to the acre in that same time period. The Seed Trade Association's news release pointed out those numbers reflect good growing years, of course. Cover crops really show their worth in challenging years. It should help soils improve their capacity to hold moisture and water infiltration improvements as well. That can minimize cash crop loss due to stress. Cover crops also reduce soil erosion, improve soil health, and increase organic matter in the soil. And finally, this story from Iowa State University Extension that says cash rental rates in the Midwest are 5 to 10% lower than they were last year, and some experts say the drop could be bigger this coming year. ISU Extension Farm Management Specialist Kevin Leibold says low commodity prices will be the main topic in 2017 cash rent discussions, but they won't be the only factor. Leibold says because ARC county payments are expected to decrease next year, it will put some additional financial pressure on rental discussions. He says landlords are also asking about the possibility of other input costs coming down. They're concerned about the talk of lower rents, but they want the input industry to participate in some of the lower cost. While some ag inputs like fertilizer have come down in price, seed costs have not. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You know, there are two types of mosquitoes that carry disease. The foggers used by cities and towns can be a pretty effective tool for controlling mosquitoes. They can even be used around the house. It's best, however, to start with the basics. Both types of disease-carrying mosquitoes need standing water to hatch. Get rid of it, especially if it's nasty water, says University of Illinois Extension entomologist Phil Nixon.
Those mosquitoes are quiet biters. They will kind of sneak up and bite you. They're the ones, in the case of northern house mosquito, transmitting West Nile virus. In the case of Asian tiger mosquito, will transmit Zika virus if it gets established this coming summer. So both of these mosquitoes tend to be relatively short-range flyers, usually no more than a quarter of a mile, maybe a half a mile. And so what you do in your own property and around in your neighborhood, what your neighbors do, can make a huge difference in the number of these mosquitoes and thus the likelihood of being bitten.
Well, the first line of defense, says Phil Nixon and the Centers for Disease Control, is to protect your own person and your family. Use an EPA-registered insect repellent. Clean out your gutters. Get rid of that standing water. If you want to go further, for instance, in the case of a backyard get-together, even in the Midwest, where Zika-carrying mosquitoes are unlikely to appear, call in bigger guns like Darren Bohannon. He owns a Mosquito Squad franchise.
So we're treating your yard here in the Midwest. We're probably not killing any of the Aegypta, but there is some other mosquitoes that carry other diseases like West Nile, heartworm for your pets. And so I think more people are concerned in their local area here in central Illinois with just the nuisance of mosquitoes.
One final note on mosquitoes. You heard Phil Nixon say that two disease-carrying types sneak up on you. Those two types aren't particularly noisy, so less to worry about if you hear that mosquito buzzing by just before you feel its bite. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Let's take a moment now to explore the TPP, or the Trans-Pacific Partnership, as it's related to peace. The Democratic and GOP platforms take a tough line on regional security in the Pacific. However, they fail to acknowledge, say, some agricultural organizations, the role of trade in the Trans-Pacific Partnership on that front. The two platforms point to regional threats from North Korea and China amid an increasingly tense security environment in the Pacific. But on the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal, there's no mention of security, only jobs and/or the environment. However, trade experts consistently cite the nexus of TPP and peace. Dave Salmonson is with the American Farm Bureau Federation.
Well, it certainly, we think, will lead to better relations among the countries who are the TPP partners and the other countries that do want to join.
And here's former USDA trade advisor under the Bill Clinton administration, Paul Drazik.
The more countries trade amongst themselves, the less likely they are to fight. And, you know, that's one of the things, if we have good relations in that part of the world, that, I think, would help us counteract the pressures and force of China in that region.
Democrats and Republicans complain that China has not lived up to its WTO commitments and has kept its currency artificially low, undercutting U.S. farm and other exports. Its military expansion in the South China Sea and failure to rein in North Korea have also shown up in the two-party platforms. But security is not mentioned when it comes to TPP. Yet Obama's trade advisor, Michael Froman, made the connection earlier.
So there's a lot here at stake economically as well as strategically. These countries want us to be involved in their lives. They want our engagement. And as a Pacific power, we want to be engaged. It's a key part of our rebalancing strategy towards Asia.
Trade experts, lawmakers, and others see TPP and its focus on economic and political security as a counterweight to a rising China. They argue a delay in ratification could upset U.S. allies like Japan, whose lawmakers aim to ratify TPP in November. On this Monday afternoon, let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. Amy Sage is here from the Andersons, that is. Thanks, Amy, for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, producers probably taking a look at the soybean price, and I don't know whether they were moved to call you about this today or not. Were they really concerned?
Actually, we did have some people calling in about the price today, mostly just wondering if there was something they were missing outside of weather issues. But it sounds like that's pretty much what we have going on. Crop prospects looking pretty good, and now we're in August. So not a lot of sales on the books today, which at this point we have seen sales in beans along the way. So as we get further through the month of August, there'll probably be some more sales that get put on if prices stay relatively good compared to where we were 6-8 months ago. So obviously we've taken quite a bit out of the market at $2 out of the market here since the highs that we put in, but still looking at good yields. These prices aren't terrible. We can make money here with a good crop.
And I take it then you suspect farmers, once they have a decent idea of what they've got out there, ought to make some additional sales?
Yeah, I think so. Unless we run into any issues, you know, want to make sure that we're keeping a handle on this thing. And you know, you never know what's going to happen with beans because they can tend to be a little bit of a wild card with demand and with South America. So nothing really ever surprises me, to be honest, anymore in the bean complex. But looking solely at our supply side here today, you know, we are still above where we were a majority of the time that we could have sold the 2015 crop. So I guess we won't get too discouraged at this point.
What do you think you have left in the way of corn to buy from last year's crop?
It's dwindling, but there are still people that are hanging on to some and may just hang on to it now into the next crop year if we don't see a bounce back. But I would say anywhere from around 15%, give or take.
And do you have yourself emptied out at this point?
We don't yet, but we will be going into harvest, so we'll have a busy month of August.
And finally, you had kind of a tough time earlier in the year, lost one of your bins. Have you got that set back up and ready for harvest?
In the process of that right now, so things are going well, and we expect to have that in position before harvest, but we're obviously making plans accordingly for a big crop and with potentially limited space, so we'll adjust accordingly to make sure that we can keep our doors open.
And your bids for the day?
Yes, sir. We are 325 on cash corn. Fall corn across the scale is going to be 314. We've got 986 for cash beans today. Fall beans at 936. Cash wheat at 388. And new crop, we are going to be at 460.
Thanks so much, Amy.
Thank you.
Amy Sage is with the Andersons. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this very first day of August 2016, a Monday afternoon. We're joined from Wrist Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois, by meteorologist Mark Russo. Thanks, Mark, for being with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure, Todd.
Let's start not here in the United States, but overseas. I'd like to start in China and talk about the wet weather that they've had this year. How big of an event was this on a long-term scale? And I'm thinking when we think back to 1993 here in the United States, mm-hmm. In the growing regions, it was a 500-year event. Their flooding and rainfall was pretty impressive. Where does it stand?
Well, it's tough to specifically quantify this type of event here because it's actually been a series of events which started back in June in some areas and continued into July. Most of the heavier rainfall was down in the Yangtze River Basin. That's their far southern part of their corn and soybean acreage. That occurred back in June. And then in July, especially the first half of July, is where the northern part of their corn and bean belt began to get hit. That's the Yellow River Basin, or what we call the North China Plain. Now, with their geography, part of the reason that they had these flooding issues is just because of the geography, because of the quick elevation change where you have your main corn and soybean areas, but then that quickly goes into the mountainous areas, and you had this feed of tropical moisture right into those areas. So it certainly has been very unusual, and it's been numerous years. You have to go back at least the last similar year in China, as this year from a rainfall and flooding standpoint, was 1998, which was also this transition going from El Nino to La Nina. So that's actually not a coincidence that they're having these heavy rains and flooding what occurred this year. I would say, again, this is just without quantifying it, but not as big of at least coverage to what happened in 1993 here in the Midwest, but nonetheless, it's still very significant and impacted a percentage of their cropland. The debate is, what is that exact percentage?
We may never know, but I suppose we'll get some guesses from China eventually. Come back here to the United States. What does the forecast look like for the Midwest?
Well, specifically in the Midwest, our forecast for the next couple of weeks calls for a warmer temperature bias, but nothing that extreme here coming up. The hottest days upcoming over the next 2 weeks actually look to be here in the short term. It's the next 5 days or now through Friday. From a precip standpoint, we're going to continue to have opportunities for rain. The pattern doesn't look as active such as what we've seen the past couple of weeks, but nonetheless, there will be opportunities for rain as this ridge of high pressure, and albeit a weak ridge of high pressure, shifts back and forth west to east across the western and the central U.S. So as long as it continues to move, that's going to open the door for these rainfall opportunities. And overall, we expect a majority coverage of rainfall, of significant rainfall over the next couple of weeks across the main corn and soybean belt.
Hey, thanks so much, Mark, for being with us today.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois, and helps us wrap up this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.